The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This episode of Beyond is brought to you by ForHims.com. ForHims.com.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 I don't know why I did jazz hands.
Yeah, I don't know. That was weird. Welcome, everyone, to Podcast Beyond, episode 540. My name is Marty Sleeville. I'm joined by Brian Altano.
Brap, brap.
Jonathan Dornbush.
Pardon.
And a lot of beers. We have a really good show planned for you today. This is the first week in a long time we're not talking about God of War. But luckily, we have a God of War spoiler cast.
What if we did, though?
Corey, yeah. I mean, I know that's what we all want to talk about. Mm-hmm. We'll probably talk about it at some point. But I just wanted to give a heads up that we do have a God of War spoiler cast with Corey.
Every time that someone says God of War, I still think they're saying God of War like yeah. The Pokemon.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It gets
that
tough.
Happens a lot.
God of War.
It's messing me up.
That'll be up later this week.
Probably American accent.
Yeah, a little bit.
But today we are talking about Detroit Become Human. Alana got to play quite a bit of it in France for the IGN first, so we'll talk about that. Valve acquired the Firewatch developers Campo Santo, so we're going to talk about what that means for the future of In the Valley of Gods, mm-hmm. as well as other Valve games. And then we got some news on the Final Fantasy VII remake, as well as spoilers of the next Bioshock game.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's always weird that we're like everyone is playing God of War right now, and we're like, well, we did that.
Yeah.
And we'll come back later. But
Yeah.
No,
that happening with Horizon Zero Dawn and people in the office being like, I know you've all played it, but remember the world is now just playing it. And it's, I don't know, I think it's been really fun to play God of War and then have it come out and re-experience it with everyone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like getting all the tweets about it and being like, I just got to this part. It's like, it feels like it's a community that's playing it now.
It's really awesome.
It's so hard to have talked about it in these vague notions for 2 weeks, even with people in the office, and be like, man, when you get to that part, or man, that character is very cool. And now people, you can actually just say, this thing was awesome.
Yeah, but people do know who have played it that's why we had to sort of walk on eggshells. It is such a special experience getting to certain things for the first time, and we all got to get to it not knowing about it. So we want to make sure everyone else could too.
Yeah, I saw this kicking around Twitter, but I guess I'll retweet it in person on this show. But
that's how that works.
I'll echo the sentiment. Don't look up trophy lists if you're like vaguely interested in the way the sort of narrative unfolds in this game. I know like that part of your brain is sort of like, but I want to know about the trophies. They're great. They're there.
Yeah.
You'll find them.
And
if you care about the story, don't look it up because it spoils a lot.
Oh, absolutely. And as someone who has platinumed it, like it is an achievable platinum, so don't feel like you need to look it up in the middle of your adventure. Yeah. Like you'll be okay. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I also saw a lot of people being like, you think I should get a PlayStation for this? Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Totally.
Based on my score, I would say, maybe.
Also, if you don't have one by now, like either you don't care.
The list of reasons to get one is so long.
So many reasons. I mean, I would have told you to buy one 2 months ago with Bloodborne being free. That's a good place to start.
Or 3 years ago when Bloodborne came out.
Right, when it first came out. Yeah.
Definitely get one.
Yeah. God of War. Yeah. God of War is just another reason.
Enjoy. We are at the top of the wave right now. Everyone loves the game. We are a few days away
from the backlash.
Yep.
Yeah.
The inevitable think pieces about why it's hateful to animals and it's just mean in general.
I mean, I thought about writing something that was like, everyone's talking about how amazing it is. Here's the stuff that I don't like about it. And none of my complaints are very deep. And I thought about doing that, but it was like, you know what? I don't want to get that abuse. I'm not going to write that because I don't want to get yelled at.
So what is one thing you guys, without going to spoilers, is there like something you kind of hate about
the game? No, actually, when we were, not to throw you under the bus, Jonathan, we were having a discussion. We always have the discussion about.
And he threw me under a bus.
An actual literal bus.
We were talking about like, you know, how a game gets a 10 here at IGN. And it's obviously a big process. And for this game, a bunch of people here had finished it and we all sort of like talked about what we liked and didn't like. And for me, I was one of the few people on staff that was probably like, I don't think it's a 10. I think it's very, very high 9.
Sure. Yeah.
Which again, that's a fantastic score.
How dare you
score.
Hate the game.
It's an amazing score. But, I did find it, I found some pacing issues towards the end. And I found like there was one sequence specifically, which I felt like was a little repetitive and a little sort of long in the tooth. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like it got a little.
I can almost guess what that is.
Yes.
Because I didn't feel like there were any of those issues, but there's one place that people have been talking about.
Yeah.
Zach and I were talking about the game on Saturday and I agree with that.
Yeah. But, I mean, I adore it.
And, yeah.
You know,
my complaint's the level system. I had so much XP and so little abilities that I actually cared about.
Oh, right.
Some of the abilities that you can unlock with things that I actively didn't want. Like, it would be like, do this, and you push enemies further away. And I'm like, no, I want them to be closer to me because it's hard. So that was my biggest thing, is I had a lot of XP, not a lot of drive to keep upgrading. But that ultimately doesn't matter because they could have just given me those abilities whenever they wanted and I would still enjoy the game. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's not a huge flaw, but it's a thing that's like, I didn't really care about this
one. I definitely fell for my abilities pretty early. Like, the ones I gravitated towards in the first couple hours are the ones I ended up using, like, late game.
Yeah, I think... going off of both what Alani you said and Brian and Marty, what everyone said, like the discussion over the 10 is there are, I had minor issues with
of course.
And again, 10 is not, we talked about this on the live stream I did with it for a bit. It's not perfect.
Nothing's perfect.
It's a perfect game. It's, for me, it was a masterpiece and we had those discussions and talking to people who did have larger issues with it than me is enlightening and helping to narrow down to that score.
We did a thing on Up at Noon recently. You can go check the newest episode. It was like, we wanted to turn it into like a breakout. It turned out to be like a 25 minute piece. Half the episode, but we talked about the 10 games that IGN has given a 10 to this generation and how well we think they're going to scale in like 20-30 years, sort of piggybacking off of the top 100 games of all time list that IGN just did. And I was seeing some comments from people being like, Mario, Super Mario World, you're only saying that because it's a classic, like The Last of Us is better. And I was sort of like, well, I'm going to push back against that because I think like a game like Super Mario World ages better or has aged better than say The Last of Us. And it got me thinking about God of War, the most recent game we gave a 10, and how I really feel like it's going to be sort of like this generation's Resident Evil 4 in that I'll be able to play it 10 years from now because I think that the gameplay in it is better than The Last of Us. I will say that. Like, I think
completely agree with that.
Okay, yeah, I felt like
well, because people love The Last of Us and that is dangerous.
Yeah. Of course.
I agree the gameplay is more satisfying. Yeah.
Yes. No, The Last of Us was one of my favorite games last generation. The gameplay here blew me away.
Yeah. And I think when we look at how games age over time, the thing that makes you go back to them the most is gameplay. I think that cinematics, that's important. That's a big aspect of it. I think that like when you talk about a game like Resident Evil 4, which I always do, like legally supposed to every 5 minutes, that game has a lot of cutscenes. They're kind of hokey and kind of goofy, but what makes me come back to that game is how satisfying it is to play. Mm-hmm. And I think God of War totally nails that.
Yeah.
And so I think 10 years from now, we'll be playing it again. They'll remaster it and we'll still be talking about it. So
I think it will go down as a classic for sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same as Breath of the Wild though, I suppose. Like those are two games that games are going to have a hard time existing after these games, and God of War especially because of the way the open world is very interconnected is a thing that a lot of games try to do but fail at. Yeah. And that everything that is there, the space is physically there. Like everything you see on that map is there and loops back on itself, and they had to design that. And so many games try to do that and end up having to have cutscenes.
And it doesn't work,
And they did that really, really, really well.
Yeah, I saw Miranda's tweet about Miranda Sanchez here at IGN about how that game sort of feels like Tomb Raider in that there's like small areas and the big areas you can explore, but there's a narrative purpose behind everything you collect in that game and everything you do.
Almost every word that's said. I mean,
Yeah.
We weren't going to talk about God of War.
And also, your tweet, Alana, about how like, you know, kind of like watch out Red Dead. Like that's the other big one this year.
I don't know. I have no doubt that Red Dead is going to be an incredible game. I got so many angry responses to that tweet. It's going to be, you know, it's a Rockstar game. It's going to be incredible, but it's the same as like Red Dead 1 wasn't Game of the Year. Mass Effect 2 was. And I feel like this is the Mass Effect 2. And that was 2010, I think, which is like, that's an insane year anyway, whereas it's not, I would be surprised if any other game comes out this year that I like more than God of War because this is one of my favorite games of the past decade.
Same.
So it's like, how do you beat that?
Yeah.
We didn't give GTA 5 Game of the Year. We gave Last of Us Game of the Year.
Yeah.
So.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
tough competition.
It's very tough.
GTA 4 got it either. It was
no.
No, I don't think so. Back in 2008. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, eventually, you know, Red Dead will sell it'll sell way better copies and make billions of dollars. But I think like the perception is that I think like really heavily story driven games kind of stick with people more. Not to say that Red Dead won't have that, obviously, but it's also going to have like a big robust online mode and stuff like that. It'll people will come to it for different reasons, but I think people are all coming to God of War for the same stuff.
Yeah, and I think GTA 5 is one of the best games ever made, but I don't have an emotional attachment to GTA 5 the way I do with Mass Effect 2.
No,
that's
I didn't.
Kind of the difference.
I didn't cry when I finished GTA 5.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Or at any point.
Yeah. Really? No. Yeah.
Great game.
You didn't cry while playing tennis?
Only the tennis.
I did because I'm very bad at tennis.
Just made you cry. Like we said, we didn't talk about God of War.
Yeah, not at all. Sorry about that. Just 9 minutes. Quick off the top. Nope. How you doing?
But yes, getting to our main topic, a PlayStation game that's coming out in about a month is Detroit Become Human. That's coming out on May 25th. Alana, you just streamed a bit of the game as well as you got to play a couple hours of the game and you did our IGN first.
Yeah, so I just streamed the demo, which is out tonight. So by the time you hear the show, it'll be out. That is just the Connor demo, which we've already seen a million times. But even playing it just then with Max, the VOD will be up on YouTube. There were things that I hadn't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
I've played it 3 times. I've now played it 7 times. And we still didn't unlock every possible ending in the whole thing. And that's what Detroit is just a series of choices. And I directly asked David Cage when I did the IGN first. I was like, gamers have been burnt on the idea that every choice matters, like Telltale games. Gamers don't believe that sales pitch anymore. What do you have to reassure those people? And he was like, I can't say how anyone's going to react, but the script is 4,000 pages long, which is so much more than any screenplay. And he was like talking about it being a nightmare to QA test, because how do you QA test? The problem is like, sure, you have a choice every scene, but you actually have 10 tiny choices, which build into a bigger choice, which builds into a bigger choice. And say a character dies early on in the game, you won't see them later in the game when they would have appeared. And it's like, it's huge. It really is huge. And I can't tell you that the ending's going to pan out, but when I asked the devs how many endings there were, none of them could answer me.
What?
Yeah, not one. Every single time I said, how many endings does this game have? And they're all in completely different interviews. It's not like this was rehearsed. They're all thinking. David Cage says, I don't know, a lot. Another one was like, that depends what you define as an ending. The interview cuts, and he goes, do you want me to actually find the number? I think it's floating around in an email somewhere, but I don't know what it is. Like, they don't know how big
it is.
That's how big it is. And it really does feel that way. Every single thing that you do, there are scenes that you can completely skip, that you won't even get a certain scene or even meet a certain character because you didn't make the choices that led that way. But at no point does it feel poorly paced. It always feels like, it never feels like you missed anything if you did. You wouldn't know until you saw the thing afterwards, and then you're like, wait a minute, what did I miss? And it conveniently lets you just hit X to replay a scene. So you can replay whatever you want. And the way that David Cage suggests playing through it, and the way that I'm going to play through it, and I imagine a lot of people will, is just have one full playthrough, finish it your way, make all the choices you would make. I'm already struggling with the idea that I made a choice in my preview that I'm like, am I going to make the same one? Like, I don't know. Because there's a character who died that I like felt really responsible about, but the conflict I've been having for the past month since I played it is, okay, but what if I save him and then he hates me because of what I had to do to save him? Which is worse, him dying or him hating me? He was like, I don't know. It's just a lot of pressure.
Did you start from the beginning? Like, did you have all of the context? Okay, so you had all the context people will have when they get to that point.
The start of the game is the Connor demo. That's the beginning of the game.
Oh, interesting. Okay, cool.
Him flicking the coin in the elevator is the start.
That's what we just
saw. People play this tonight on PS4, they'll play the beginning of the game like anybody else would.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, awesome. So the thing that's sort of like kind of gray about the whole idea of choices is that they're not always necessarily choices, right? Like sometimes you hesitate in a cutscene and a character dies or gets hurt. That's the way Heavy Rain unfolded, was like there was, which had a quantifiable amount of endings. 13, I believe, was another 11, 12 or 13. Cause I remember Greg Miller, doing the guide for that game or doing a piece on all the endings. And it was sort of like, it's like, oh my God, you have a lot more patience than I do. But one of my favorite things about that game was talking to people like Greg and other people, having those water cooler conversations about, you know, what we did and how we interacted with stuff. And a lot of people, like who weren't that great at the game, I watched them play in front of me, and like they're in a fight, the guy wins the fight that they're fighting against, and he runs off, and he's just a goddamn threat later in the game. And so that's not really a choice as much as it is like, oh, hit square.
No, it's like a consequence, but it doesn't have as much QTEs as I think previous games have.
That's good to hear.
But I still think it's similar to that. It is definitely like Heavy Rain in style, and that's the thing is like, they have two modes for it as well. As I'm sure my sister will play this game. She likes Heavy Rain. She played Heavy Rain. And she's not a gamer, but she's totally going to play this game and like be able to like talk to me about oh, wait, that happened for you? Like, what happened with this part? But right. I think that the idea is that there are too many questions that you could never even understand someone else's playthrough, really, because there are too many questions you could ask about, like, what about this part? What about this part? It's just too big. And again, they're like, we haven't even known how to QA test this. Like, we don't know how to do it, because how do you follow the exact same path when there's 1,000 choices?
Right, so, right.
I don't know that all of them are going to be impactful or anything, but it is really, really impressive. And another thing that I really like about it is they hired a DP. So they had a director of photography who has only ever worked like in Hollywood on films and TV shows and stuff like that. So each character, because there are three playable characters, are shot differently and lighted differently, and they have different grain and different cameras. So Connor, who is basically a really high-tech android who acts as a detective, he has like white and blue are his colors. His camera is quite steady and just like follows him around environments, but it's also wide so you can see things because he's a detective. His soundtrack, each one of them has a different composer.
That's really cool.
His soundtrack's like really like tech heavy and kind of techno-y and sounds really cool. And then you go to Kara, who the idea of her is that she's framed within frames within frames. So the camera is like oppressing her all the time. So she looks small and like is really boxed into environments, kind of to like mimic what's happening to her in the story, because she's probably like the most empathetic character and is just trying to protect someone.
That's
her
awesome.
Her colors are yellow and green. She's got like a tight grain. And then Marcus's camera is supposed to be like a steady cam because he's the leader of this revolution. So his is like more shaky and kind of erratic, and his colors are red and orange and yellow, which is supposed to be because of like the Olympic torch is what they wanted, like it to like remind you that he is like this beacon of something, basically trying to accomplish something. So I think even that is like, there's so much detail. They all have different composers. They all have been shot and lit in different cameras, and it's just so much thought went into this one thing.
I appreciate how sort of filmic that is, because that was, what was it? Not, was Traffic? Not the movie Traffic, not
the Steven Soderbergh movie?
The one, what am I talking about? It's the, we're, it's
the basically, movie Traffic.
Yeah, every time they went in different places in that movie, they, the drug trafficking movie. Weren't there two movies named Traffic?
No, there's Traffic. No. There's just Traffic.
There's just Traffic. Yeah. Am I thinking of the wrong movie?
Are you thinking anyway, like City of God or something? Or,
no, yeah. I'm thinking of or, like this a drug trafficking movie where every time they went to Mexico, it was like red and orange. Mm-hmm. And they went back to America and it was like dark blue and navy.
Breaking
and
Bad
like
did a really
Breaking
good
Bad does a really good job
the
of that.
The color wheel of Breaking Bad is incredible, just like character by character.
Yeah, by character. Is, which
really
is,
similar.
Yeah, it's such a subtle thing that you don't really pick up on it in video games a lot. I mean, everyone has different colors in video games. It's like red team versus blue team and stuff like that. But this is like,
it's there for a reason.
Yeah.
It's there to make you feel something without realizing you're feeling
something. But it's also like Kara's lights. She has those, I think they call like tungsten lights. So they are yellowy, whereas like the lights in the places Connor goes to are a lot
That's
more
so
white. And like they just had to set everything really specifically to make these characters.
So it's not even color based. It's like literally how they're lit. Like you said, a DP.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, all of it.
I keep like sort of, I don't know, kind of tucking this game in my back pocket and just not really thinking too much about it and just keeping my hype levels sort of at a distance. And like,
it's not perfect.
Right. You know? Right.
I think the tech is really impressive and there was a lot of effort put into making it feel the way that it does. And I'm very, very, very excited to play it. But there are still some things that I think are really silly. Like the one example I give is you go to a crime scene as Connor and you're there with the detective who he's basically just like, tell me what happened. And so you walk around getting clues because Connor can like rebuild things. That's the way that his tech works. And then at the end, the detective you're with basically like quizzes you and is like, all right, hotshot android, because he hates androids because they all do. And he's a grisly alcoholic detective because of course he is. And he gives you a quiz and you have to answer it. And there's like a slight delay. So it'll be like, he was attacked with the, and then you select it. And one of the things is he was stabbed with the knife. And the detective is like, wow, you're pretty smart. But it's like he's clearly got 19 stab wounds and is lying next to a bloody knife.
Yeah. And what else
like,
would he be
clearly
stabbed with?
He had been stabbed. Why are you impressed? So it's like this stuff like that that's just like, okay, it's like a little bit silly.
I mean, I'd be impressed if it was a spoon. Like that takes some work.
Definitely
wow, he was killed with a spoon.
That was clearly there. It's like nothing that Connor does in that situation is particularly smart. But
is the voice acting good?
I like Connor's voice acting.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
oh, good. Because that was
a big worry from Heavy Rain.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I think Beyond Two Souls also, although they got some really high caliber people in that game. But the sort of all over the place, like the children in Heavy Rain were clearly French. Clearly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the one guy just said origami.
Origami killer.
Yeah. No, I think the voice acting is pretty solid. It also, like, my biggest complaint, this is a thing that I think I've spoken about being worried about on the show before, is it doesn't control great. You fight with the controls a lot. And that's just like trying to bend down and like oh, I guess you didn't angle the joystick perfectly or whatever, or like swiping on something. The most annoying thing that every time that it happened, I screwed it up, was moments where it tells you to lift the control, so you physically have to move the DualShock up.
Oh, right. And every time I'd be like, come on. I can't believe that stuff's still happening.
Yeah,
yeah, that's been pervasive for them.
So, I mean, Heavy Rain.
I would think PlayStation maybe asked them to do it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean,
no one else is using this the way that we hoped it would be used because it's annoying.
Or this, they started developing this game back when this was still a thing.
I mean, remember, like, nothing can be as bad as Beyond Two Souls, like controlling the ghost. That was, I imagine.
Heavy Rain was bad too, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But didn't you have to walk with a trigger and then, I feel like there were very extra steps you had to take.
But Heavy Rain also did some pretty smart stuff with, sort of purposely making the controls obtuse.
Yeah.
Like when you get in a car accident in that game, having to sort of like struggle out of the seatbelt to reach the latch. They did all this stuff where you're like, they made you hold the controller in a way I've never held a controller before because it was purposely supposed to feel awkward and
so
difficult.
So that's the thing that they've done in this as well. We got a, exclusive gameplay clip actually that should be up on the site right now.
Roll it.
No, that's
all the scene. Called Mass Grave, and basically
it's a comedy.
Try to avoid any spoilers. It's gonna be hard to talk about it, but a character has basically like been torn apart and thrown into this android junkyard where all these androids are like decaying and like reaching out to you and like begging you not to let them die, and it's like, it's pretty brutal. But you start there with your optics disabled and like one of your audio receptors disabled and whatever powers you disabled. So basically, as you're supposed to be feeling the struggle of the character, like climbing to like find a new leg to rip off another android to put on yourself, it makes you press buttons in the way that it feels like a struggle. And I think that's the thing that they do very smartly. Because it's not QTEs, so it's not like there's a timer. There is for some of the dialogue stuff, but this is just like a, like, you have to press the right thing and do it at the right time. And they, I don't know, it feels like they pick the right part of the controller to make you press at a certain time to make you feel like you are going through the struggle the character is going through.
Like, it makes sense there. Like, put yourself in the role of this character if you're in a car crash or in a mass grave. Like, that makes sense. But if I'm, like, bending down to pick up a glass of water,
it's awkwardly precise is what it is. And, like, I don't know, it feels like it's more precise than a fighting game.
That's weird.
And then it's like, why do I have to do this multiple times? And I was worried about this before it came out, and then it really is like that, but I think it's excusable, and then I think this game is going to be fun enough to play through and to talk to everyone about that I'll like tolerate it, but it's certainly not perfect. And it's just kind of weird to me that they haven't figured that out yet.
Does this feel like it'll be fun in like group settings, like the way Until Dawn was?
So I'm thinking about like organizing a Let's Play in this, for sure, in the same way as Until Dawn, but I was thinking about doing it with Max actually, where one of us is trying to kill everyone and one of us is trying to keep everyone alive. So, say he's trying to keep every character alive and I'm trying to kill every single one of them.
Right.
And we get to make every second choice. So, we're just fighting with each other constantly. So, I think that would be super.
I love the idea of like having to clean up other people's messes.
Right.
Yeah. So does it, like, some of the themes, at least like at a superficial level, feel like they're similar to Westworld, which I know a lot of people are watching. Season 2 just started. I mean, clearly it does deal just with like sentience and AI and androids and everything. Do you get any similar vibes? Like, does Kara seem like a Dolores to you? I guess without going to spoilers to that show.
Not really. I think that Westworld is about that universe and the way that that universe functions, whereas Detroit is about humanity. And they try to make Detroit a game we tried to make a sci-fi game that is not sci-fi, that doesn't feel like sci-fi. It just happens to be the world in the future. It's very subtle. So it doesn't feel like it's, you know, Westworld and it has this like full system and this full plot built around it. It's just these androids going deviant is what they call it, and just like screwing up and just wanting to be human, and just that struggle of, it's more about, human reflections and human values. It's way more of like a parallel for just like blatant racism than it is for the way that Westworld tackles it.
Right. So it's a little more Blade Runner-y?
I guess. Yeah. Probably more Blade Runner than Westworld, I would say.
Because like by 2049, they're, you know, they basically treat replicants like...
It's... I can't say how well it deals with those themes because I don't know. But it definitely is more about like them wanting to feel like human. I would say it's more Blade Runner-y, more like parallel for racism for sure.
Cool.
And then
awesome.
No, I love like dystopian sci-fi stuff like that. So that's like, I don't know. I'm into that angle. See if they handle it well. Yeah. To me, like Westworld's one of those shows where at this point, like, I don't know. I'm not rooting for anyone anymore.
Yeah.
There isn't a single likable character left. Everyone is sort of morally ambiguous, and you know, it's sort of like, who is the robot? Is it us? Shut up.
I feel like the territory.
I still watch it because it's a gorgeous, bleak sci-fi.
That's why they even announced season two, that I don't think that show needed a season two because I think the first season is almost perfect.
I totally agree.
So I don't even know if I want to watch it. But
yep.
Yeah, Detroit is definitely a human story where you're supposed to empathize with the androids. And one thing that I have a theory on this, so it's not a spoiler because it's totally not confirmed. So Connor, being the smart android, I think that he can die multiple times in the game, but he always gets reset. So he's rebooted. I don't think the other two are because they deviate really early.
Oh.
So Connor is hunting deviant androids. I assume he ends up hunting Kara and Marcus, meaning that he hasn't deviated for quite a long time. But if he dies, he gets reset. If he lives in every circumstance, there's a thing on the screen that says like destabilizing or something along those lines. So I think that if you keep Connor alive and he hunts more and more androids and remembers every single one that he's hunted, that he is more likely to deviate.
Mm-hmm.
That based on the amount of androids that he's had to kill or mess up, that it's slowly messing him up.
It's getting to him.
In theory, if he dies every time, you're resetting him every time, so maybe he will never deviate.
That's really interesting.
Which means that even if you screw up and accidentally kill him, you change how quickly he sides with the other two characters.
Oh, man.
I don't know, but that's like kind of what I'm thinking, and I'm very intrigued by that.
I feel like that whole stabilization mechanic just opens them up to so many more threads that for you have to plan for each scene, someone stabilizing or destabilizing with him, and what that means then for the future, if he does that for three scenes versus not. My big worry is just that, obviously, they've put as much work as they can into the script, because so much of the game is the script, that it works, then it's successfully like enjoyable, even if you take one path versus another path. Like, I wonder how you balance that to make sure if someone does every scene this way, it can be just as enjoyable as doing every scene the other way,
so
or mixing.
There's one scene where I took the simplest path, unknowingly. I just did the simplest thing, and it was, I guess, because I was trying to save someone, and I was just like, I'm going to do this because it seems obvious, but it meant that I didn't talk to anyone in the environment. I like very much hid from everything and like tried to like just do whatever was safe. So for me, I would not have guessed that I had taken the simplest path if they didn't tell me.
Okay.
So I don't know how it does that so well, because it's still, you know, I see the branches afterwards and I'm like, whoa, I could have done so much more. And they're like, oh, yeah, you kind of wasted that scene. Like, they didn't say that.
Right.
But it was like brought to me like, oh, you could have done so much more there. It sucks that you can't replay it because there's so many more options. But it never feels like, at no point during that experience, because the decision I had to make was still really hard, because it like, you know, I felt very immersed in what I had chosen. It never felt like I was robbed. So I, assuming that the weight of the choices is always equal, I don't think you'll ever feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say for a 12-hour game.
Yeah. Right.
But one thing is, I know if you accidentally kill characters earlier, the game will be shorter, like by quite a burst.
Interesting.
So if everyone dies, then you won't necessarily make it as far.
Got the platinum for this game is going to be
How you speed run it?
Yes.
I think David Cage said, like, and I don't remember this exactly, so I don't want to be quoted on it, but I think he said that the platinum would take like 40 hours or so.
Oh, okay. That's
which isn't too bad. Yeah, but it might even be longer than that. I could look up, if people are very curious about it and let me know, I could look up the interview and like find
the transcription for it. It was just...
It could be more than
two
that.
Zeros, right?
I think the game is supposed to be like 12-ish, but it can be way longer or way shorter.
Wow, I'm actually really surprised that it's that long.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping it was 5 and that I could play through it 3 or 4 times.
I mean, again, it sounds like 12 might just be an average.
Well, and devs usually lie.
That's true.
Usually you just half whatever they say.
Well, except we thought that was God of War's case and it wasn't.
It wasn't turned out to be.
Yeah. I feel like they lowballed it on God of War.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see, but I am really excited to play it and play it again and play it again.
And I think it is coming out at a really good time. Because A, it's far enough away from God of War to where I feel like most of us will be done with it by then.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have to compete with that.
Yeah.
But also it's before E3. So, you know, this game that's been at several E3s and PAXs and PSXs, we'll finally be able to get it into our hands, finish it before the show. And then that way that lets us go into E3 to Sony's conference, seeing new stuff and not seeing the same thing again.
It's just cool to have a thing that I think everyone can play, and there's no part that's going to be too difficult for anyone.
Yeah.
And you just make choices the whole time.
I'm super fascinated to see what Sony's E3 looks like without all of the big things that have been in the last 3 E3s.
Surely
just
we'll
out
have more
now.
Spider-Man.
Yes.
Yes.
An
definitely.
Hour of Spider-Man.
I hope so.
Maybe that's Death Stranding, unless they save it for the Game Awards again.
Yeah.
I mean.
Days Gone.
Yeah.
Lost of Us Part 2.
Ghost of Tsushima.
Knack 3, naturally.
Yeah. Don't say that. Everyone stop
Knack
it. 4. Don't immediately go to Knack 4 either.
Knack 4 on PSP.
Yeah.
What? You
Knack
not
Attack,
make,
the party game.
Yeah. Not make Knack
Attack. Everyone's favorite, either. Knack Racing.
Don't say Knack VR. That's just your inside his stomach.
Mark Zoni's not listening. Also, a fun fact about Detroit.
I'm going his stomach.
Mark Zoni played the game, and he's a really sweet man, and apparently he made a comment that was like, it's a shame about your depth of field.
In Knack?
No, in Detroit.
Oh.
And they were all crazy offended. They were like, what does he mean our depth of field isn't good? So they rebuilt everything.
Oh.
They just were like, all right, we're fixing it. Mock Sony said it was not great.
That's
we're absolutely.
I feel like that's like when Miyamoto walks into a room and he's like, oh, put Star Fox characters in your dinosaur
game.
And they're like, oh,
everyone says, what do you mean he doesn't jump that well?
What if you shook everyone's hand in a hospital at the end of GoldenEye? Yeah. We have to rebuild the game.
I still want that scene. Yeah,
I love the idea that like Mark Cerny came into like Bloodborne early on and was like, oh, this is a cute city. And Miyazaki's like, we can't make it cute. Rebuild it. We gotta rebuild the art and make it messed up.
Make everyone
the
horrible.
The city looks really dry.
Yeah.
Like, make everything look wet.
Fill it with flaps. Make it look so moist.
Yeah. Oh,
God.
There's a lot of flaps in Yharnam.
I
don't
know. A lot of flaps. Gotta miss
Man, them. I hope we get Bloodborne too.
Yeah, me too.
That'd be nice.
Hope we get something like that.
Attention Male Beyond listeners, we have an important message from ForHims.com. 66% of men experience hair loss by age 35. By the time most folks notice, it's usually too late, so if you've noticed your hairline slowly receding or bald spots popping up, why not do something about it right now? Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. ForHims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness that connects you with real doctors for medical-grade solutions for problems that maybe you're too embarrassed about to handle in person. That means no waiting room, no doctor visits, no snake oil pills or supplements that they sell behind the counter at gas stations. These are prescription solutions backed by actual science. You just visit ForHims.com, answer a few questions, and a doctor will review and prescribe accordingly. Then products are shipped directly and discreetly to your door. While supplies last, Beyond listeners can get a trial month for just $5 when they head to forhims.com/beyond. This would cost hundreds of dollars from a doctor or pharmacy, so $5 for your first month is a steal. Again, that's forhims.com/beyond. Thanks. Now back to the show.
Well, you're in luck because there's something similar to that coming down the roads.
Really?
Nope, absolutely
no,
not.
No, nope. This is a bad segue.
This was not a good segue. Over the weekend, some very unexpected news came from the developers at Campo Santo, who did Firewatch and are now doing The Valley of Gods. They are officially employees of Valve. So as of now, the name Campo Santo doesn't really exist, it seems like. So all of them are moving up to Seattle, to Bellevue. And they are going to continue work on In the Valley of Gods. Nothing will change in that. The team will stay together at Valve, but this will be a Valve-developed game and a Valve-published game. And the interesting thing about this is, like, A, I think that's only good for this game.
Yes.
Because it sounds like, I mean, we've interviewed Sean and Jake and
people
and
will
Chris.
Know what this game is now because of this announcement.
Because of this announcement, totally. Yeah. And it sounds like they wouldn't have made this move if they didn't know that they were going to have the autonomy to continue to make the thing that was their vision, which, I guess if you don't know, In the Valley of Gods was revealed during the Game Awards, and it's another first place puzzle narrative game, where you're two documentarians in the early 1900s who go to Egypt to a lost, tomb or temple to try to make a documentary.
I get the song from the trailer stuck in my
head. It's so good.
Yeah,
the drums and everything.
Yeah.
It's such a good trailer.
God, that's awesome.
So the interesting thing about this is it's still set to be a 2019 game. You imagine it might be easier for them because, if anything, they'll have a ton of QA behind their back. So they can still work on the game proper, and then they'll have Valve QA. But my big question is, what happens to them after this? Do you think they can?
Even this doesn't make sense. My question is why. Like, I think that game's going to be really interesting. Mm-hmm. I like the team a lot. Why did Valve go for this? If you look at Portal, Team Fortress, Left 4 Dead. If you look at those.
Dota. Yeah.
With Dota. Why this game?
It's a really good question. I think it's surprising to us because this, historically doesn't really happen in the medium of video games, but it's something we see a lot happen in music where like a band will, in the middle of a project, switch record labels and then just have a new place to finish their album and put it out. Usually,
Valve like never does this.
No, that's where it gets odd. But what's weird about this is that like these guys they didn't finish their game and they're shopping it around for like a distributor. Mm-hmm. They're still working on it. And Valve was like, come work on it here. And if you want to use our VO booth, you can do that. And, like, and you get all these free Steam games and stuff like that, you know?
They did it for the Dota too.
Yeah,
I deal with that weird Valve culture where they don't have managers, they just have leaders that are like chosen from the group. It's like it's weird.
Yeah, they don't have seats. They just have weird balls they probably sit on.
Yeah,
they might have seats.
They just roll around like Iggy Koopa all day. I don't know what's going on. I find that interesting, but I don't know. I mean, I think that like Valve is probably trying to diversify their portfolio, and they are trying to kind of like put out this array of games that, you know, that to be known for making games again. And the easiest way to do that is to get people who are making games already rather than start developing from the ground up.
I just, in my head, this means that, you know, with the way that they acquired Portal, that, which I don't remember the name of it.
Nebacular Drop?
Something.
It's Kim's Swiss game. Yeah.
In the Valley of the Gods must just have something incredible really that cool. We don't know about it.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it sounded the thing they were gunning for is that you film a documentary inside the game.
Right.
Yeah. And if Valve saw that and was like, hey, what if we help you turn that into a hook that's not just a cute thing like developing the photos in Firewatch, but a like, oh my God, other games are looking at this. Like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
Like, you've put Movie Maker inside of a video game.
Well, I mean, I think this is a good studio to latch onto right now, you know? Like, this, they're also, I mean, we're forgetting they're making a Firewatch movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's, it's a cool get for everyone involved.
They may have.
I believe Valve's first game with these guys will be the Switch port of Firewatch.
Yeah, is Valve's name going to be on that?
Probably. I mean, at this point, I mean,
have that weird man with the Valve and stuff.
Is that going to be how weird it be to load up Firewatch on Switch and see the Valve logo?
I mean, all of that makes no sense anyway, right? Like,
it's a good get. Again, is it even? Like, I don't understand what Valve's doing right now. They said that they miss making video games, that they're envious of how Nintendo's able to do it, and I get that. And I totally think that this game is going to be cool, and it's a cool place to start. But Steam makes so much money. Is it worth it?
Maybe they had a killer Portal 3 pitch.
I mean,
maybe. I think Sean Bannerman in there with Portal 3.
I don't think that's insane.
I wouldn't discount the idea that in the Valley of Gods, they go to a famous Valve property. Like, that's not out of the question.
I think they had a killer quarter 4 and they were like, we have a ton of money. Let's spend it. Like,
Valve, they don't have reasons to really make games anymore. Steam just prints money.
Well, I mean, for a couple of years, Netflix didn't have reasons to make shows, right? Like, they could just kind of sign deals with licensees and they could bring in movie studios.
Though. Like, sure, there's Origin.
Yeah.
Aside from that, there isn't a ton of competition other than Steam. And if you're an indie dev, you're going to publish on Steam anyway. They would have published this game on Steam anyway.
I mean, there's no competition on PC. I mean, except for like EA Origins or something like that. But on consoles, on platforms, I mean, there's
they
all this money
choice.
There.
They can't even exist. Then.
Yeah, but they're not like Valve isn't making any money off of console games.
True,
but they will now. Yeah, you know.
Well, and I don't know. Maybe they see it as future-proofing talent for the next 20 years. Is that you know,
they have a really good team.
Sean Vanneman, Jake Rodkin, they turned the ship around at Telltale. Like, they were the leads behind Walking Dead Season 1.
Yeah,
which. Won Game of the Year in a lot of places, and again, put Telltale back on the map. And then they left, and Firewatch was an incredible debut indie that people loved, had an amazing visual aesthetic with Ollie
sold
Moss.
Well.
Sold well. And so maybe they see a similar thing in this, but honestly, maybe they did talk about, like, would you guys want to lead up a Half-Life game? Would you guys want to lead up something in the Half-Life universe? Like, maybe stick to your... what they want to do in terms of, you know, narrative-based exploration adventure games.
Firewatch 2, never Firewatch 3.
That's the thing, is you can never do that. But, like, maybe they're going to do something in the Portal universe that is a walking simulator. I don't know.
Technically, Portal is a walking simulator.
But it's also a vooping simulator.
You definitely do voop.
That's the verb.
Don't like
you
that.
Do lots of voops.
I don't like that word.
Well, voops when you go into the blue one.
You got to stop saying that word.
It's hoops when you come out the orange one.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is that what they call it?
That's what Gabe said.
All right.
So yeah, we know that we have two Valve games on the horizon with in the Valley of Gods as well as Artifact, which is the Dota card game, which are two things that Miranda cares about.
Yep.
Maybe Gabe Newell just really wanted people to shut up saying that Valve doesn't make games anymore.
I honestly think my guess here is, like, I want to understand the business behind it. I want to ask Gabe why. Like, from a business perspective, it doesn't make sense to me. But I'm wondering if maybe it's just the dude's passionate and just wants to start doing it again. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe that's it. Maybe he's just like, I really appreciate this team of very talented people who made something that was both critically and commercially successful. And I want to walk around them.
Yeah.
It could be as simple as that.
I 100% believe there is a certain bit of it that is the passion, the legacy of looking at Valve, you know, years down the line. It doesn't hurt the companies who have also put out games that are beloved as well as just selling games.
Also, I don't know. If I was ever filthy rich like that, I would totally want to throw money at things that I thought were cool.
Yeah.
And creators that I totally trust.
Ever, really?
Yeah.
Like, he's never really done that?
Yeah, exactly.
I guess Portal would help, but.
Yeah, and I think the good news here is that this isn't like this isn't a hostile takeover or something like that. No. You know, yeah. this sounded like they were like,
yeah. And they didn't do this because they were like itching for money. Yeah. Like you said, the movie's in development. Yep. Like,
they have a nice office.
They have a very nice, they had a nice office. Well, now they probably have a nicer office.
Yeah. I mean, development won't be affected in a negative way. I assume it can only be affected in a
positive. Except they're probably going to like have to take like a week or two off to move.
Now they have just money printed for them. They're fine. Yeah. But it's interesting.
That Valve actually has a mint underneath it.
Really?
May as well.
Not the mint, like the, not like a sweet. Like a candy.
It's also, I imagine they're going to get really great front page promotion on Steam when this rolls out.
I mean,
that seems like,
So it could be similar to the Netflix thing where, I read recently that Netflix isn't particularly profitable at the moment. That all of the money that they spend on new IPs to get more people in the hopes that they will be profitable. Mm-hmm. But right now they aren't really. And it could be the same thing as like, obviously Steam is hugely profitable, but it's the same thing where it's like, well, we want to make sure people stay on this platform, have platform exclusivity. Like, does that mean that the game is not coming to other platforms though? Does that mean it's PC exclusive?
I mean, I hope not. Cause
hope not too.
I think the game is still going to come out on other systems. I think I said, but who knows what their future games are going to be on.
Yeah.
I think it is, there is a certain extent of what Netflix does in creating so much original content is also in the future when they lose licensing deals. Mm-hmm. Maybe they lose 50 movies, but they made another 50, another 100.
Right.
That
you can just say, well, we have the numbers.
No, like I said, like if this was a hostile takeover situation and they're like, this is a Steam game only now. And like the, I don't know, the good guy Gabe Newell meme goes away.
Yeah,
I think that sucks for everybody, especially this show that just spent 15 minutes
talking. I think it'll just be really curious if this is an anomaly or if they do.
Or if this is the start of something different.
Yeah, if it's the start of something, it makes more sense.
Yes.
But right now, I'm like,
yeah.
No, as a solitary move, it is odd.
Yeah. 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 But if like all of a sudden they announce like, oh, we bought the creators of Outlast and then we bought Fulbright, you're like,
Capybara.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Does that mean Below's coming out?
We're making games now?
Below is already out. You didn't know it.
Steam. Frog Fractions. Speaking of games that probably aren't going to be out for a while, we got a small update for Final Fantasy VII Remake. I put this in here just because everyone cares about this, but this was very dumb.
I care about this.
Good. Okay. So there was a job listing that went up. Gamatsu did the translation, but they were hiring a combat programmer or combat planner and a battle planner. I don't know what the difference between the two of those are.
Also, that means it's so early on.
It means it's so early on. But the description said 1997 with dedicated fans and the like. Even now, 20 years after release, it's no exaggeration to say that Final Fantasy VII, which boasts over 11 million total shipments and download sales in the worldwide market, is a masterpiece of a series beloved by fans all over the world. And now we've announced the release of Final Fantasy VII Remake. Due to the huge reaction, we are aiming for nothing less than a, quote, new creation, end quote, and not limited to a simple remake. It should be noted that this is an internal production. After 20 years, the staff behind the original Final Fantasy VII, who are top rankers in the industry even now, are reuniting. It's a project to create, quote, a title that surpasses the original, end quote, and is starting full scale.
So any of the work done outside of the studio doesn't exist anymore?
So that's the thing, is when this was originally revealed, which is some of the footage you're seeing now, CyberConnect was working on it, who are known for making Naruto games, and they worked on the, what's it, Wrath of Basura, or... What was it? Sura's Wrath. Wrath of Basura's Wrath of the Garbage.
I was going to say, Basura's
Did I just editorialize that?
Before we get into this...
Jose and I used to call that game Basura's Wrath.
Can we just talk about how they boast over 11 million total shipments, and that's like 10% of what GTA 5 has shipped?
GTA is at 90?
You're like, oh, 11 million. Then I'm like, oh, wait, that's not even that much. And this is like... You would think it's one of the most popular games ever made.
20 years old.
Not even that much.
People were very mad when we put it at 99 on our top 100 list.
Yeah. It wasn't.
But one thing, by saying that it's a, what was their words, a, quote, new creation and not a simple remake, I think that was sort of obvious. Again, if you're watching the video right now, the footage, this is a 20-year-old game where the characters are weird, fat, chibi men and women. And when you go into battle, they become a bit more realistic. So you would imagine this is going to look a lot more like Final Fantasy 15, clearly, than like a traditional.
That footage is also, what, three years old at this point? And then between then and now, we found out the game is episodic. Then we stopped hearing about
Surely
that.
Surely it's not episodic.
I hope.
Who knows? Is it still?
I
who knows?
It's like Final Fantasy 15 style.
It is weird that unless a bunch of people just bounced, that it's weird that they're hiring for
battles.
I don't know
now?
Battles. Yeah. Like that's kind of a big deal.
Do you think the game's gonna have combat?
Yeah. I mean, that's like if in 2015 or 2016, like. I don't know. God of War was like, we're looking for an axe guy. If anyone knows anything about axes, now's the time. This is your game. It's like, you don't have the axe stuff down? Man, like, it's going to be a problem. pencils down, man. Like, homework's due.
Be like, this week, Insomniac's looking for someone to do the web swing.
Yeah. Like, hey, we're really getting into webs. Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody ever been in New York?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Build it.
Yeah.
I'm not, I won't say I'm worried about this one.
I'm worried.
You are?
This makes me excited about it. Yeah, if they wait another 4 years and give me a Final Fantasy 15 style Final Fantasy 7 on board.
Sure. Yeah. No, that sounds fantastic. And I think, if you look at the sales numbers on 15 and the way that rolled out, like that, it seemed like an insane business proposition to work on a game like that for 35 years and then put it out. But they've made their money back. Well, they also sprung out all these different sort of like
still servicing. It's like that game's still like a game as by, game.
It's on that's iPhone. There's like that VR offshoot. There's all this stuff that came.
It's like
that.
Almost. For all intents and purposes, ultimately an episodic game, except that the first episode is front loaded.
Yeah.
And then since then, we've gotten four different episodic things. We're getting a bunch of different sort of new endings, the
yeah,
entire
I'm
multiplayer
okay
mode.
The concept of episodic if it's in one open world that I have from the start. I don't know how they do that in Final Fantasy VII, but legit, this, a new creation rather than a remake and them hiring people to work on the mechanics of combat effectively makes me excited, not worried. That makes me like, all right, give me something completely different. I love this story and I like the characters.
Also,
I didn't like playing the game that much. So it's like, if you give me all of the stuff that I liked in a bigger, more grand package, I'm on board.
Mm-hmm. Also with them saying internal production, if that's what the translation fully says, like that shows that there's a level of care to it going in that I don't think, like, even if the third party studio is great, there's still a disconnect there.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
having
right.
original people who worked on it and having it be this thing within Square, I think makes
reassures me. The thing I'm curious about is, so we know Tabata, who directed Final Fantasy XV, is no longer working on Final Fantasy XV. He's on to his next project, and he was brought into that to sort of finish it. The game, after 7 years after Versus 13, he came aboard and he shipped the game. And so I'm curious if he gets put on this next.
I thought it was said that he's not working on a Final Fantasy right now.
Oh, I 100% think he's either working on this, the rumored Type 1, or just whatever Final Fantasy 16 is.
Mm.
Like, I think at this point, like, they're like, you were able to do the thing other people couldn't do.
Right.
Please do it again.
Also, this one might also be a tiny development cycle, because if they have that, you know, that's unheard of in the industry virtually. It's usually 3-ish.
Yeah.
Like, and maybe they're like, well, it worked for 15, so why can't we do it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It worked.
Do you guys think we'll see it this generation then? Like, knowing how early on it is, this something we see within
this
generation?
I hope not.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want it to be rushed.
So, I guess the question is, why did we see it already? Like, why?
It's for the same reason.
By the way this sounds, it was that they intended to release it, and then we're like, oh, people are way more excited than we thought, and then had to scale back, and we're like, no, we really need to redo this. So it's like, I think they readjusted plans based on the reception.
I think they rescoped the entire project.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I think they probably looked at it and said, like, well, I think like 15 came out and they're like, let's go in that direction more rather than just a straight up remake. But I don't know. It's weird because we see remakes happen all the time and remasters all the time right now. We got Shadow of the Colossus just recently. It happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that had just enough added to it where it felt like, you know, you polished some of the stuff that was rough around the edges. You added some stuff that some people were 50-50 on, but mostly like that is kind of just a remake. This is effectively a brand new game built from the ground up. And to me, it seems like they showed their hand a little early on it.
Yeah. I mean, which Square does.
Yeah.
Square did with Kingdom Hearts 3, with Versus 13.
It's true.
Yeah.
That is true. They have a history of that.
Yeah.
And it usually pays off for them, so.
Yeah, definitely did with Kingdom Hearts 3.
People are still super excited about Kingdom Hearts 3, though.
Yeah,
yes,
not a lot of devs can get away with that, right?
You're
people.
On the wrong camera, Bear.
Person.
Tim.
Hi. I'm excited about that game. Yeah. And it's there's so many things that they release too early that you get drowned on, but KH3 is not that.
They sort of limited the drip of information on that game at least early on. Like, they had the premiere trailer and then kind of stopped for a bit, and only recently in the last year or two have they done a trailer at every big convention.
I mean, honestly, to me, two games recently that have got it right in terms of when we show it and when it comes out were God of War, and then, assuming it doesn't get delayed, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Because those were both revealed last year, at E3 2016, and then we saw bigger things at E3 2017, and both of them were out in 2018.
It is so incredibly sort of relieving and delightful to sit down and play a video game and say to yourself, like, oh man, I don't know a lot about this.
Bethesda's like, so good at that.
Oh, yeah. Bethesda's incredible.
Which
incredible.
It's so odd because we are in, and a lot of it is like where we, you know, we just this medium. If you're listening to this podcast right now, you already have your ear to the street more than most people who just go out and walk into the store and they're like, what's good for the PlayStation? And some guy's like, this trash. And you go on with some garbage.
Basura's Wrath.
Yeah, Basura's Wrath. And so we're all, you know, we click on everything. We watch our video and all that kind of, we watch every E3 press conference, consume it all. But I feel like something like God of War was kind of perfect because I knew a lot going in, but I realized I didn't know anything until I really started digging
in. So I would say I'm one of the three biggest God of War fans in the office, and interestingly enough, all three of us, which is also Megan Sullivan and Mitchell Saltzman, they have similar initials. The same. We were not excited about it. The three of us were apprehensive about it because the game didn't show any of the things that I'm glad I hadn't seen now, but it was a weird marketing cycle. And then I was like, is this really a God of War game? Is the combat going to be satisfying? And they couldn't show off the cool stuff. And I get that now, but during that marketing cycle, I was unimpressed.
Yeah.
And then I started hearing like, you played it. And I was like, oh, this sounds incredible. And then I played it and I was like, no, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And that cycle too, at least the time wise of it for me feels sort of like the limit for what I would want of a game, like that 2.5-ish, 2 year.
I think Horizon Zero Dawn was a little too much marketing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can definitely happen. You were saying sort of Bethesda. They do the short tail so well too. They do, hey, it's out in 6 months.
I think Nintendo does a pretty good job as well.
Yeah.
I think you get like what, 2 E3s tops before it starts getting to a point where it's like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. You know, like that's something like Days Gone. Like I think there's going to be a lot of delight and surprise in that game, but we've also been seeing it for a long time. And I have a very strong understanding of how that game will sort of roll out compared to something like God of War or Spider-Man, which I feel like we've seen almost nothing of, and I'm just as excited for them. So it's difficult because you have to drum up excitement and support, and at the same time, less is more sometimes.
Yeah. Think about how Red Dead did it. We've seen some screenshots.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Two brief trailers.
Chunks.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. And everyone's like, game of the year already.
Yep.
Yeah.
Gonna outsell everything else ever.
Yeah. I mean, even GTA, I remember when GTA 5, I was working here during that rollout.
The helicopter?
Yeah. Rockstar would wake up one day and be like, here's one screenshot. And people would be like, oh my God.
No one cared. You remember they changed the logo to red on Twitter and everyone was like, ah!
I think with those things, it's like it's a known quantity, right? Like we know Rockstar. We know what they're capable of. With Red Dead, I have this massive idea of what it's going to be like. Because I played Red Dead, I played GTA 5. I know what that's going to look and feel like.
Had a said Guerrilla's game would be what they made. I wouldn't be like,
exactly.
Seriously.
Or like, what is a God of War 2018?
Game? Or like, you know, what the new Spider-Man game's like?
Yeah. I mean, all even we can Insomniac, piece together. A great studio has made incredible stuff.
Yes.
If you were like, the minute I heard they were making a Spider-Man game, I was sold, to be fair.
But there's also the weird way to sell a game of like Death Stranding. Where we've seen three giant chunks of the last 3 years.
Those are just short films.
And I'm still what are you?
Just short films.
What do I do with
obscure short films.
What do you do with your hands in the game?
I don't know what my moment to moment is in Death Stranding, and that's like really interesting to me.
I don't care if that game's bad as long as I keep getting short films.
Me too.
The game could be bad and you'd be like, just keep churning these out. They're amazing.
I mean, if the game's bad but weird and interesting, then I think that's
why Deadly Premonition is my favorite video game.
I was talking to someone like a couple weeks ago and they were like, we were talking about Death Stranding and they were like, isn't like the baby the health bar? And I was like, I'm pretty sure Brian said that on Beyond.
That as a joke.
Yeah.
But
that might be true. I said that as a joke. I said it as a joke like
a year
ago. I
think the baby is Norman Reedus.
Yeah. Norman Fetus. Yeah.
Yeah. And he has to keep it alive to keep himself alive to like save some kind of time loop.
That's
baby's Norman Reedus.
That's so terrifying. We'll see.
What if your baby comes out and does this?
A thumbs up?
I found a photo of me as a child.
Proud father.
Doing that exact pose, actually. Yeah.
You?
Yeah.
You are I'm Norman the baby. Fetus?
So I have a big announcement to make. I am the fetus in Death Stranding.
They did mocap for you.
I have a big announcement. I am the fetus.
I'm the one who
fetuses.
It's
my sequel to the Beatles, I am the walrus.
Terrible. I don't know how you get out of that. Our last story of the day. In a Jason Schreier report that there's been some drama at Hangar 13 on a Mafia 4 and another game that was in development and sort of just projects being canceled and people leaving, there was a little bit sort of embedded in the end of it that there is a secret studio up in Marin that has very few people and no one really knows what's going on with it, but they're codenamed Parkside and they're within 2K Marin and Hangar and they are working on the next BioShock game. On the quotes were, quote, if anyone from Hangar 13 tried to strike up a conversation with those of us at the studio, they'd say, oh, we can't really talk about it. It was all very tight-lipped, and the issue is that they don't have a lot of people. They said that they are trying to be really smart about figuring out what this core thing is. Okay, so The Take-Two CEO, Strauss Zelnick, has said before that he considers Bioshock to be like a core franchise that they want to revisit. Even though it's pretty clear that it's not with Ken Levine, who's at Ghost Story Games working on their own narrative Lego, whatever that is, the thing that they've been talking about for a couple of years.
I like narrative Lego.
Those are what Labo is, right?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So if we are getting a new Bioshock from 2K Marin, is that something we want? Or is it something that we just don't want a new Bioshock?
So everyone's going to yell at me today for everything I'm saying.
That's why I put no for you.
No, I don't want it. My stance on that is if Ken Levine is not making it, then I don't want it. But even with Bioshock Infinite, he didn't get to make the game that he wanted because 2K made him change the core concept. If you hear him talking about that game before it came out and then what came out, it's like, I just don't trust this at all. Like, I love Bioshock a lot. That first game is absolutely incredible, and I understand what Infinite does well and how many games have been shaped by it, but I'm at a point where I don't feel like I need any more if it's not under the right circumstances, and I don't think this is. It's also that Take-Two has a stance where they will not ship a game without microtransactions at this point. Mm-hmm. It's going to have microtransactions no matter what. It's like, I'm worried it's a cash grab.
I would be completely for, like, a just very, very, very stark reimagining of what this series is entirely. I think that it lost its way. I think it lost its way by the second one, honestly.
Same. But that wasn't Ken either.
No. But I mean, it's still, for all intents and purposes, anyone who went to a video game store and bought the game that said Bioshock 2 on it, went home and played a game that was like mostly meandering and repetitive.
Felt like a DLC.
Yeah, and it had a lot of good stuff in it, and I finished that game, and I actually enjoyed
the ending a lot.
Yeah, me too. I actually love the ending, especially the bad endings.
Yeah,
really cool. But I think that like the idea that like it's a futuristic city gone awry where there are good guys and bad guys, and some of them are robotic in some weird way. Mm-hmm. I think there's something cool to that. I think the buying drugs from the vending machine thing and fighting like 1950s back. So that's the thing is like when this game first came out, there was nothing like it. And we've had what feels like 10 games since then that have kind of explored that same sort of like not necessarily like narrative, but that era in different ways where I just feel like we've gone into that time period a lot. And I would like to see this take a more sort of Assassin's Creed approach where you go, you ask the questions like the way Ryan Johnson is asking questions about Star Wars, where he's like, what is Star Wars? I'm going to go write a new trilogy. You know, George Lucas isn't making it. J.J. Abrams isn't making it. What is this? And I know a lot of you are very angry that I said that man's name right now. I'm sorry.
Hey, I said I didn't want a Westworld season 2 or a new Bioshock.
Well, you know, you and I can share the hate this week. Yeah. Follow us on Twitter. I think if someone comes into this and goes, okay, the original people aren't working on this. But conceptually, like, I love this idea. I think this is a great place to sort of develop, like, a fun video game where you have awesome powers and you fight horrifying things and it brings beauty and terror and fear all into one place. And it's a good place gone awry. You take those themes, you bring in this like chilling music, you get the full orchestra and everything.
You're absolutely
like
right. You make a really good point.
Yeah.
Refreshing the thing is a good concept.
I think if you make Bioshock 4, like, you kind of suck. Cause I think if you just go in and you're like, here's the sequel to 2 or 3, or here's the next step in those stories. And this time it's in a forest or, you know, space.
I have no doubt that like 2K could find the gameplay people to make a solid playing Bioshock shooter and with the plasmids and everything. My concern would be, I'm sort of mixed of it because I love Bioshock so much and really do want more of that universe. But for me, what matters is telling that story of a city gone awry, whatever sort of generation they want to put it in. But also so much of it to me is like the nature of storytelling is embedded in those games, whether it's the twist in the first Bioshock or the end of Bioshock Infinite and things in two. Exactly. Like there's so much on the commentary of just telling stories and how that process. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a core thing to say as part of a Bioshock game, and I don't know what there is to say from. Well, I need to know what the person behind that is saying. If that's interesting.
My hope for a thing like this is that they're taking the approach that Capcom did with Resident Evil 7, where
that'd
it's like
great.
Throw the baby out with the bathwater and start anew. And then, like you said, maybe go like what are the core tenets of Resident Evil? Right. And I feel like those are there in Resident Evil 7, but it looks and plays so different from what Resident Evil is.
There are some things that I do want more of. Like they can keep making Resident Evil games as like what Resident Evil is, but completely different in that way, and I'm all for it. But like I didn't want Mass Effect Andromeda because I was like, I'm good on Mass Effect. Mm. Like before that game even came out, I was like, I don't want this. And I don't know. I guess it's always just a Resident Evil doesn't feel like it has to be finished at any point. I guess Bioshock doesn't either, but point being is just that it gets to a point where I worry about it being a cash grab and then like retroactively hurting my impression of a franchise.
Yeah,
my
and sure, yeah. Resident Evil wasn't as associated with Shinji Mikami as Bioshock is with Ken, or like something like, I don't know how I'd feel if they were like, oh, a new team at Konami is making a new core Metal Gear game. I'd be like, ooh, I don't want that. Nope, only one person can do that.
I think that's exactly how I would feel about it. It's like, don't give me another Metal Gear game.
My thing with this is that, like, my favorite Bioshock thing is Minerva's Den, and that was who went on to become Fulbright Company. So, like, a non-Ken Levine-led team can make an incredible story in a city gone awry.
We're also, I mean, we're talking about a lot of franchises that had kind of gone south or have had stepped in the wrong direction, fatigued us. Stuff like Mass Effect, Resident Evil, I would say even God of War, right?
Yeah.
Which is another one.
Yeah, with
Ascension. I mean, Assassin's Creed got to that point for me too, where I was like, stop making these, please, and then Origins is incredible.
I would argue that like Bioshock Infinite, or Bioshock, Bioshock Infinite effectively brought the franchise to a good place, left on a high note. I mean, this game has some issues, right?
Like,
digging through
a lot of people
for
love
pineapple.
It. I way prefer the first, but a lot of people love it.
Of course. I'm totally with you. Actually, like, I love the setting of Infinite.
Yeah.
I think about the ending a lot.
And all the cool
Me too. Yeah. I think about the beginning and end of that game, so much, not the middle, which I think is a product of the fraught development of it.
Yes.
Having someone else, Rod Ferguson, had to come in and finish the game. It went on for years. Yeah. Like, there were clearly problems that.
And so
Ken didn't get to make the game that he really wanted to make, seemingly.
And so, like, all parties involved in that are gone. With Resident Evil, it was sort of just like, you guys got to fix this. Like, who is this for anymore?
Yeah.
It was like half for people who wanted the original, half for people who wanted Resident Evil 4, and half for people who wanted Call of Duty. Yeah. And I realize that's three halves, but I didn't go to math school.
It's kind of, if it's in reboot territory, then I think you're right. You like totally have effectively changed my mind during this conversation, Brian, in that if it's, you know, if they had have said God of War 4 and it was going to take place in the same world, I would have been like, I don't think I need any more from that universe.
Yes.
But then making it God of War made it different. I feel the same way about Dead Space. I don't want a Dead Space 4, but if you give me a new Dead Space, then it's different. So if they do give it not a Bioshock 4, then I would be like, no, I don't want that. Reboot it, like have it separate from the lore, like different universe. Then
and it's been long enough. It will have been, even if this gets announced this year, it'll have been 5 years.
We've all been like gushing about God of War for a couple of weeks publicly on social media and stuff like that. And one of the biggest questions I get frequently, I'm sure you've all gotten it, is, I didn't play the first three. Do I have to? And I can triumphantly say, no, jump into this one.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big deal. It's kind of difficult, especially with the way our medium pushes back, right? Video games kill you and they push you away and they stop you from playing them. And they're hard to get sometimes. Like, it's hard to play old video games on new platforms. It's nice when you can come into a story fresh and appreciate it. And if there's little tendrils there that reach back into the past, then cool. But I would love for a new generation to step in and experience what is Bioshock all over again. And I don't think I know what that looks like, but that's not my job to solve. I'm just a dumb man that says I like things or don't like things.
Yeah.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
I guess I'm nervous about it, but I would say that it's probably healthy to be nervous about almost anything, especially a beloved franchise like Bioshock.
Yeah.
I mean, my reaction to this one has also been so many people being like, oh my God, did you hear there's a new Bioshock being made? I'm so excited. And I'm like, hold the phone. Don't be.
Yeah.
Then it's better. If you're not excited, you're better off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's
cautious
a good life
optimism.
Lesson.
Yeah.
There
it is. Your expectations. Yeah. Well, there you have it. We did a full episode. I'm proud of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us all on Twitter. Brian is at Agent Pizzle. Jonathan is at JM Dornbush. Alan is at Charles Anizard, and I am at Nick Biggity. You can find us all on various IGN shows, including Unlocked, NVC, Up at Noon. Right?
I think
so. Those are the three of them.
Yeah.
Those are three. Fireteam Chat would never invite any of us, so that's fine.
I love that game that they cover there. What is it?
Roblox. Roblox.
Just joking.
Thank you all so much. This was Beyond episode 540. Remember, at the end of this week, you can check out a spoiler cast with God of War spoiler cast with Corey. Otherwise, we'll see you all next week. Bye.
Beyond.
Oh,
nice. We did it weird.
That was wonderful.
It was weird.
Yeah. Sweet.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode, so search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.